Congress. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
WCVE Public Radio HD. Brian Ford joins us now from RBC Wealth Management for analysis of the business news. Good morning, Brian.
Hi, Wayne. How you doing there?
All right. Well, it's Columbus Day, a holiday for some markets, not for others. What can we expect today?
Well, you're right. It is Columbus Day. The banks and the bond markets are closed, but the stock market is open. So I wouldn't expect too much today in the way of heavy financial news, but there will be stock market activity. I was reflecting on last week, Wayne. It was another pretty decent week, making it now five of six of the last weeks have been positive.
Markets, talking about the stock markets here. Right?
Yeah, talking about the stock markets. So stock markets must have expected the jobs report to come in as they did on Friday, which was a slight growth in corporate jobs and government cuts because of the census. It all led to a net loss of about 95,000 jobs, which is basically what people have been expecting. The Dow rose above 11,000 for the first time since May. And the S&P 500 is holding above some pretty important technical levels here. So that's actually been very positive. However, there's still so many people looking for work. You know, the unemployment rate still is over 9.5%. And they're also looking for something good for their business. Wayne, I could not help but think of this when I read the news this weekend that the miners who have been trapped in the Chilean mines for over 2 months, you've heard about that, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're almost out. In fact, likely this week that some folks will be coming out of the mine. It made me think that there's still millions of workers out there in the U.S. and around the world, and investors, too, waiting to be pulled up, waiting to be rescued to return to their former life before the recession.
Good analogy. Well, we're hearing that for the second year in a row, Social Security beneficiaries, recipients, won't be getting a cost of living increase because of virtually flat inflation.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a really big story, Wayne. Now, this you and I have talked before about this inflation/deflation debate and which one is the worst problem, which one do we tackle here. But you're right. Let's analyze what's going on here. The big news this weekend was that Social Security is not going to have any cost of living adjustment, what some people call COLA, for retirees again in 2011. 2010, if you remember, was the first year that the Social Security system did not include any increase in benefits which are normally occur every year. This is a very big deal, Wayne, because many retirees live on fixed pensions and income, and they are seeing their health care and energy costs and other costs especially rise rapidly. In fact, senior health care costs are rising very sharply. Talk about a double whammy. Retirees suffer from deflation on their benefits and then inflation on their costs, making them fall further behind. 58 million people currently get Social Security in the U.S., and studies show that for over 64% of them, Wayne, Social Security is the main source of income. Another angle on this inflation-deflation issue I know this weekend was I saw where Kroger is telling its premium brand food providers they better be willing to, pardon the pun, swallow some cost increase. The large grocery chain is seeing deflation set in among many consumer buying choices as less expensive private brands gain more acceptance.
We have about 2.5 minutes left. The TARP program, much talked about over the past, two years, has officially ended, and I understand it didn't cost the government, that is the taxpayers, as much as expected.
Boy, this has been a political hot potato for 2 years, Wayne. TARP, let's remember what it stood for. TARP stands for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. It was born 2 years ago, a very controversial bailout, and some people view it as a subsidy for the biggest of the big Wall Street banks, the very companies people view as having contributed in large part to the severity of this recession. Cost estimates back then and even now were thrown out at $700 billion to the U.S. taxpayer, but it turns out it cost a whole lot less. Because so many banks have repaid in full quickly, and some keep paying 5% interest, the amount to taxpayers may well be under $100 billion, some think as low as $50 billion. Now, okay, let's face it, Wayne, it's still a lot of money, but well below what was initially thought about. Nearly 80% of the recipients have paid it off in full, but some well-known banks like SunTrust and Key Bank out of Ohio and Regions Financial have not paid their money back. Contrary to popular belief, TARP did not just go to the big banks. It went to nearly 500 small and community banks as well. TARP was an interesting, rare, bipartisan effort in Washington, D.C. that was very unpopular but has been proven to be effective. Today, most politicians continue to distance themselves, and the recent Dodd-Frank reform bill will try to ensure that a bailout like this does not happen in this form again.
We have about 40 seconds left. Yep. A few weeks ago, you introduced us to the concept of QE2. Mm-hmm. What's the view on that now?
Sure. Well, just quickly, QE2 is quantitative easing, too. It's another form of fiscal stimulus provided by the Federal Reserve, and it's coming. They're hinting in so many different ways that it's coming. They're rebuying U.S. Treasury bills to keep interest rates low. But there's a lot of smart people, including PIMCO's Mohammed El-Erian, who think it may not be worthwhile at all. And they're very concerned that we'll be going backwards in our economy again sometime soon. They think a pullback is likely.
Okay. Brian, thanks very much.
See you later, Wayne.
Okay. Brian Ford at RBC Wealth Management. It's 840.